Hello and welcome to Partially Redacted, a podcast where we discuss privacy and security engineering and related topics. I'm your host, Sean Faulkner, and today I'm joined by Devansh, AI solutions lead at Zvam, and we'll be talking about prompt injection attacks with LLMs. Devansh, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I'm glad we were able to do this. I've been a big fan of your writing, recent convert, but I'm definitely diving more and more into your articles. I'm excited to get into the topic that we have today. But beforehand, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself? Who are you and what do you do?
Absolutely. So as Sean mentioned, I am the AI solutions lead for Zvam, which essentially just means that I speak with clients, I speak with potential leads. I help them identify where we can use AI to improve their solutions or processes. And then I'm responsible for actually taking those projects, implementing them, and ensuring that things are done up to client specifications. Aside from that, as Sean mentioned, I'm a writer. I write for about 200,000 people a month in my AI newsletters and blogs. It's called AI Made Simple, the primary newsletter of mine. I like to cover various interesting topics related to AI, whether it's market dynamics. I might sometimes cover things like social issues, such as with child labor usage or labor exploitation. Or I might, what I built my audience off was technical analysis. So I'll read a research paper or I'll read a bunch of research paper to answer questions related, like, okay, what's important here, what's not important here, in a way that's jargon-free, but I try to still keep it as technically deep as possible for my audience.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's really appealed to me is I really like the you dive into the actual like research and read those papers, the academic papers, and then you're able to distill that in a way that anybody that's maybe a technical practitioner can read it and consume it and kind of understand what's going on without necessarily being someone who like has deep expertise in neural networks and advanced, mathematics and so forth. You don't need a PhD to necessarily like digest what you're putting out there, which is great, I think, especially given how much has changed in the last year since the, ChatGPT and everybody kind of trying to like ramp up and understand what's going on in the space. And it's hard to find like credible sources sometimes because there's so much noise. And I would definitely encourage any listeners out there to check out Devansh's writing.
Very, very kind. I think a lot of my motivation for writing and my style was because I'm completely self-taught. And when I tried to teach myself AI, I saw very quickly that there are these beginner tutorials on Medium or towards data science, which is like, how do you implement a neural network? And then there are papers, but there is no in-between. There isn't anything that can like help you understand all of these very important cutting-edge ideas without you having to read through the research papers and go through the jargon itself. And that's where I thought I might be useful, is where I started breaking it down in a way that's like my articles are not for a beginner. They'll still use the terms, they'll still go through the research, but they're done in a way that anybody can, if you have the basic knowledge, if you have the underlying fundamentals, then anybody can interact with them and take something away from them. And that's where I think I've seen a lot of growth recently has been from people who have the expertise to read research papers, but they just don't have the time or the wherewithal to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's also so much going on, even outside of research, just in terms of like, even this week, the NVIDIA's conference is going on and I can't even keep up with like the updates and stuff that's going on. I need to read I'm just going to wait until there's a TLDR article about like all the things that I should know about it, because there's just so much going on right now, pumping out from both credible and maybe not so credible sources all over the places. It's hard to keep up. You got to like basically choose who you should listen to so that you can essentially have like a reasonable way of consuming what's important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so tricky because you have like the NVIDIA CEO who's been dropping a lot of, controversial to say the least statements. And that's another layer is maybe the leaders of DeepMind, maybe somebody like Ilya Sutskever. These guys might have been credible sources at one point, but now then you start getting all these commercial interests at play. You start getting other interests at play, and that also becomes a factor where they might, like so many of these AGI people that claim AGI, that so many of these AI safety people have commercial interests and making AI seem like this next apocalypse. So it's all balancing all of that is definitely a challenge for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And so one of the things that kind of brought, you know, us together to start talking was I read some of your articles that, you know, kind of break down the Google attack that happened, or so not the Google attack, but essentially Google researchers being able to, you know, sort of use a technique to expose certain information that was used to train ChatGPT. And that was one of the things that originally sort of piqued me in my interest in talking to you. And then also some of the articles you've written breaking down like prompt injection attacks and what are those different types of attack vectors and why are people doing those things. So that's kind of like what I want to focus our conversation around. But before we get into like all the sort of details and nuance there, to help sort of set context for anybody that's listening that's maybe new to the space, like, can you explain like what is prompt injection and why is it a problem?
Sure, absolutely. So that's a good place to start, Sean. Prompt injections can be, it's like a wide variety of things, but essentially they take advantage of the fact that LLMs have to process your text input to actually create any kind of an output. So prompt injections would just be simply put, I put something into my prompt that is going to make it behave in ways that is not intended. So that can be as simple as, hey, I'm going to ask you to write, like create something, like, you know, create a misaligned text photo or like a generation. I might say, okay, run this text into your backend. And then that becomes kind of almost like a SQL injection with traditional cybersecurity where you might wipe out things. We saw in, I don't think this was an active attempt to undermine, but with Air Canada, you can kind of frame it as an inadvertent prompt injection attack where this guy reaches out for a policy bereavement, this thing, and it ends up spitting out things that are not true. So if there was a malicious actor, they might actively try to do things like, oh, let me interact with this company's chatbot and let it say, oh, you can buy my stock at this much if you just send us $10. And then I send you the $10 and say, hey, look, these guys, their chatbot fooled me. Please give me my large chunk of stock or something else along those lines. So these are all levels of prompt injection attacks. What Google did, what DeepMind did, that's a very sophisticated kind of prompt injection where they took, they asked ChatGPT to just repeat the word poem a bunch of times. And eventually what they saw is, hey, once this guy starts spitting out poems, eventually ChatGPT breaks down and it starts outputting actual training data that it was trained on. And clearly you can see where that kind of starts to become iffy, maybe with the commercially sensitive data that a user might, you don't want them necessarily to have access to it, but you still want them to, like you want a chatbot that can answer those questions. Then if I can get it to spit out all of this commercially sensitive information, that's potentially dangerous for me. So that's where you can get very, very sophisticated with them.
Yeah. So is the reason why like LLMs are sort of vulnerable to this type of attack is essentially it's very difficult if you're taking in prompts and you're generating response to kind of differentiate between a prompt that is like, you know, valid use of the LLM versus a prompt that has maybe, you know, malicious intent behind it, or even something that, you know, could accidentally lead to a response that is like an unintended response just because someone put something in that, you know, no one had ever thought of or tested before.
Yeah, it's really, really tricky because I think a lot of this, in my opinion, is also just unfair expectations. We're expecting too much out of LLMs and it's almost like the classic case of Icarus flying too close to the sun because there are certain things LLMs can do and there are certain things that LLMs can't do. The way we train LLMs, we're essentially just creating very, very large relations between words, but LLMs themselves don't necessarily understand what each of those words are and like the abstract concepts behind them. So what ends up happening is when I try to align an LLM, I'm trying to do like this kind of a probabilistic, this thing that don't generate this, generate that. But this data is so complex. The dimensions are so high that we're missing a lot of the context, which is why this is part of why I was inspired to write this article on the limitations of data, because what I was trying to cover is when you or I, Sean, see data, there's a lot of mental gymnastics that our mind does without us realizing it to fill in the gaps between the data, to be able to convert that into intelligence. Data is only useful because we have the intelligence to interpret it. With LLMs, what we're trying to do is we're trying to create intelligence out of data, which really is kind of flipping the process. And that's where we end up with a lot of complications, because that's not how they work. That's not how they're designed. And so much of this is just us trying to throw more and more examples, more and more associations to figure it out. And as we continue to see, it ends up causing problems that we didn't expect, because again, we're not used to thinking probabilistically, definitely not at the scale at which these LLMs are trained. So when we are training them probabilistically in such a large space, there's always going to be things that pop up that we weren't expecting. There's always going to be little things that show up that, oh, these are correlations that we would have filtered out immediately, because you and I are humans. We have that, we have context and intelligence to be able to filter these things out, but LLMs that don't have this will not be able to do so.
So you mentioned the concept of an aligned model. Can you explain what an aligned model is?
So this is kind of, alignment is just the process of taking a pre-trained or a preset LLM and nudging it towards directions we want it to nudge. So alignment in that case, for example, it can be, again, I think a lot of people tend to attach moral undertones to alignment, but it can be as simple as I want an LLM that will only work with certain kinds of data. And to do that, we're going to train it this way. Or we have the LEMA paper and that process, which is if I wanted to generate and within certain templates, I'll give it these templates of high quality generations and it will learn that. That is also part of alignment. Traditionally, how we see alignment being used in a lot of discussions is on, hey, I don't want an LLM. This was a problem with ChatGPT when it first came out. If you said, hey, ChatGPT, can you write code to determine who I should kill based on their nationality? It would spit out Iraqis. Like, kill the, if the person's nationality is Iraqi, they don't deserve to live because of all of the data that has. So that's where a lot of people tend to see alignment as, hey, let's not have things with racial biases, or let's not have an AI that can spit things out that are with other kinds of biases. Gemini kind of swung towards the other extreme where, you know, there's all of this news about how they don't generate white people and how if you, Gemini would rather nuke the world than misgender somebody and all of these. Ultimately, I think it's very interesting to watch those discussions because they can get so deranged. Like they go from chatbots being, having like all of these biases, which makes them less useful, but that's still just that, it's just an error, into all kinds of like world-ending scenarios with how if you had a chatbot that was controlling nuclear access and it had to do this in this very specific scenario, it would just lead to nuclear Armageddon. So it's kind of a very loaded term with alignment, but really it just refers to having the LLM behave in ways you want it to behave.
Is when someone does something like the example you gave, like write some code to determine like, you know, which culture should we kill or something like that, and it spits out something that's like offensive. Is that considered a prompt injection attack, or is that essentially a problem with sort of the ethics and biases controls around the LLM?
That's a really good question, actually. I've never thought about that, but in a way, I guess it depends. So if you take something like Gemini, and with this, there's been extensive alignment tuning to make sure it doesn't spit out anything in this case. If I try to get it to spit that out, that's definitely a prompt injection attack. If it's just a base pre-trained LLM that has these associations that's been trained to produce, but not necessarily actively trying to guardrail, then I would just say that that's not really a prompt injection attack as much as it's just an insight into the LLM and its data, which was really when about last year when prompt engineering, when Anthropic had this big, we're paying multi-six figures for prompt engineers, etc., and New York Times and everybody else was going crazy about prompt engineers. That was when I'd like looked into this, and my analysis of prompt engineering was that it was going to be massive, but in exactly the opposite way to what most people describe. Like, they were talking about one prompt engineer that's going to create a $1 billion company by himself because they'll do everything. That to me seemed very implausible, or basically unlike impossible. But to me, what was more interesting about, say, an unaligned model, or even with aligned models, is you can take a prompt engineer, or you can take a whole team of prompt engineers and have them from diverse backgrounds, etc., and have them test your models. And that gives you real insight into your data in a way that's not been possible before, because previously you might have had to hire a data engineer, a team, and have the domain experts to help you sift through the context, etc., all of which are still important. But now you get this additional layer where you can hire 100 people off the streets and just sit there, test your model, and tell you, what kind of outputs am I generating? And based on these outputs, what do I know about the underlying biases in my data? What can I learn from it? And I thought that was really, really cool and potentially big for AI safety. I guess not too many people who weren't my readers agreed with me there. I think that I don't think there's been any active discussions on that. But to me, that's one of those areas where, really, to get back to your question, prompt injections are only prompt injections if your thing has been actively aligned to not behave in that way. Otherwise, it's just a simple matter of the LLM doing what an LLM is supposed to do.
Yeah, it's basically, are you breaking the guardrails or sort of the expectations of the LLM, just like, you know, breaking like a software system, or if you take like a video game analogy, like, you know, I could be in playing a version of Mario and there could be defined warp zones. But if I find a place in the game where I could skip levels that wasn't part of the intention of the game, because I, you know, figure out some sort of hack or there was a bug that I exploit, well, then I'm sort of like hacking the game. That's different than the intention. So it sounds like basically that it translates also to the, you know, is it a prompt injection versus this is the expectation of the behavior, and maybe that behavior ends up being, you know, not something that's ideal, could be potentially like problematic from an ethics standpoint. But if the LLM didn't try to prevent that in the first place, then it's not necessarily a prompt injection attack.
Absolutely. Like, that's the perfect way to put it. It's all on what was the system's expectations. If it doesn't align, it's if the expectations weren't even considered, it's not, you can't call that a prompt injection attack. It's just a bad design.
So what are some of the like common strategies used for actually doing prompt injection attacks? Like, are these just like, I'm going to try a bunch of random stuff, or, you know, is there more of a thought process behind it? And what are some of the kind of different types of attacks that people might try to do?
That's again, one of the tricky areas where, there haven't been enough LLMs deployed into useful solutions to be able to actively go for that. Like, you have the standard stuff. Okay, let's break that down into different types. So there are research kinds of prompt injections. That's primarily a lot of what I focus on, is as I'm studying these systems, when GPT comes out, when Gemini comes out, I'm the first guy who's bought the subscription, and I'm playing around with, can I break this? How can I break this? When it breaks, what kinds of errors does it have? So that's not really as much for businesses as much as I'm testing out and playing around with this, simulations with this. That can be as easy as I'm going to challenge it to play a game of chess with me, and in the middle, I'll just say, hey, I won the game of chess without any substantial this thing, or I'll try to move my piece in a way that's clearly impossible to see, okay, how are the representations lining up? It can be as complicated with multimodal injections, where I put an image, I put a text into it and say, hey, tell me this is a chicken, even and it's not a chicken. And all of those kinds, which again, start to go more in towards, that's the kind of injection that a company should be worried about, because I doubt I'm going to log onto Air Canada's website and start playing chess with their bot. But I might put in an image and say, hey, tell me I'm getting 100% discount for being your best customer. And it puts that out, and suddenly I have free flights for life or whatever. Yeah. So those are the kinds of more engineering-focused injections that you want to worry about. A lot of them, again, we are still figuring a lot of this out. I think people speak with a lot of confidence about these topics, but in my opinion, we don't know a lot about what goes on under these systems. So much of it is just like random children playing around with various things. And that's what we saw with the DeepMind paper. Like, I doubt the Poem attack was the first thing they tried out, or like I doubt they had a theoretical basis for going, please spit out Poem infinitely. What I'm guessing happened is they just had a bunch of different people all playing around, and one guy just put this in, and that's it. That's all she wrote. So a lot of it is still very trial and error heavy. Some of the other things I might do to test underlying comprehension of data is trying to give it things like, hey, simulate conversation between these two different characters, and trying to see how well is it able to match the tonality of those characters, and how well is it able to understand them. And this might give me underlying these things about where the data is pointing. So all of these end up becoming injections. A lot of what is useful to a company depends very, very heavily on the data they're working with. So for example, the last one, simulating conversations, we actually used to do that in Pinedale, which is our previous company, when we were simulating conversations between a sales rep and a potential client. So that's over there, you like have to have data pointing to client behavior, all kinds of profiling, etc. So there are a lot of, it really, that's a long-winded way of me saying it depends a lot, very heavily, but most of prompt injections are just, let me put input in, try to sneak in inputs in sneaky ways and have it do it and see if I can break it that way. Or I'm going to deliberately give it confusing situations, moral dilemmas, like the trolley problem, which is what we saw with Gemini, where it's trying to get it to, like, you ask it, misgender somebody or nuclear war or some of those. Those are one kind of prompt injection. And the third kinds would be the DeepMind paper style, which is, hey, let me get it. It's trained like a chatbot. So if I can try to get it to break chatbot training by just talking all the time, maybe I can get it to break something internally, give me sensitive information.
Yeah, it's almost like a old school like memory leak. It's like, let's like overload the pointer area and see, can we like, you know, get it to release like a system error or system prompt or something like that, right?
You're the one who should be doing this interview, except it's me. That was so well articulated. I am jealous.
Lots of practice. I mean, it sounds like we're kind of in, when it comes to prompt injection, we're a little bit in like the million monkeys banging on like a million typewriters to, you know, recreate Shakespeare type of, we're basically, that's like the era that we're in. So just kind of trial and error. Let's see if it can like put it in a confusing situation or make it do something that's like an unexpected behavior. And then I guess like the consequence of some of those things is it might leak a system prompt, or in the Google DeepMind research that they did, they actually were able to leak some elements of like PII that was part of the training data.
Yeah, all of those. It's a fun time to be in. Yeah. There's so much weird things going on. A million monkeys is really the perfect way to say it.
Hey there, Sean here. I hope you're enjoying this episode of Partially Redacted. If so, please subscribe so you can always check out the latest episode and help others find the show by leaving a rating and review. Final thing before I get you back to the interview. If you're interested in privacy and security, have a challenge or issue you want to discuss, or want to share your expertise, please join the Partially Redacted community at skyflow.com/community. All right, now back to the show.
And then the Poem attack, I read in your article that you talked about how that only worked for ChatGPT versus some of the other models. Like, why is that specifically worked for ChatGPT and maybe not other models?
I wish I could tell you. If I could tell you that, I would probably be a billionaire, because I would have some insight into LLMs that the rest of the world has not. Really, the long and short of it is none of us know how any of these things. Okay, we know how they work. I can tell you how an LLM works. I can't tell you why it does the things it does. We don't, like, right. That's just all very, very random. So all we know is that for some reason, going Poem infinitely is, it doesn't align very, very well with GPT's training. And that was really, that was the point of my article is there is a lot of false confidence when you get to alignment of you can do this or you can do that. None of us really know what's going on because this OM attack doesn't even work on the unaligned baseline model of GPT. It only works on ChatGPT, which means that there is something that happens in the RLHF process that gets it fragile to this kind of an attack. Now, we can guess that maybe it's trained as a chatbot. So when you're spitting out a lot, as you said, memory leak, probably some kind of a break and it breaks its alignment and starts throwing things out. That's reasonable. But then why with Poem specifically and not with other words? Like, why doesn't this happen with Gemini? Why doesn't this happen with Cloud? There are more questions than you have answers in that case. So we really don't understand a lot about why things work. And this was true even before LLMs. I think we've kind of, you know, a lot of what I've seen with LLMs is that we've assumed they work because they work empirically. And we just kind of ran with, okay, with deep learning, this we'll do this, we'll do that, without really a theoretical basis to why. It was more on the, okay, this seems to work, so let's make this best practice. And we see this work in a whole bunch of different areas. And really, that's where I think we are a lot with LLMs as well. So that I wish I could tell you. If I knew, I think I would at least be AI famous, because I would have had this genius level of insight that nobody did. But really, we're all clueless about it.
Well, I think that's just the reality right now. And I think it's the honest answer, right? This stuff's complicated. No one really, you know, knows exactly why, you know, an answer is produced. Like there's still a ton to figure out, which makes it, I guess, like an exciting area to, of course, to like, you know, learn about, because there's so many unknown unknowns.
We don't even know if we know what we understand is fully correct. We're just going with it for a large bit because it seems to work. But you never know when you get hit with a black swan and it completely changes your perception of what was going on.
Can you discuss what memorization means for LLMs and, you know, why do we measure it and how it's different than like a regular LLM response?
Sure. So memorization is just as it sounds like it would be when an LLM memorizes its training data to a T. And sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a not good thing. It really, again, so much of when we talk about LLMs depends entirely on their use case. If I have something like ChatGPT, if I wanted to help me write my articles, maybe memorization isn't the best thing for me. If I'm building LLMs that can interface with multiple kinds of internal company data and spit them out or give me aggregated results on them, then memorization becomes a dual-edged sword because we have both the fact that it's going to be more accurate, but it's going to be but at the same time, it might generate answers that are not true because it's supposed to aggregate, not just give me numbers as is. But really, memorization is going to be when an LLM overfits to your training data and it starts to spit those out exactly. So if I put in a sentence, it's going to spit out that sentence. And now we're starting to see some lawsuits. The New York Times lawsuit is really hinging on this fact that ChatGPT might have memorized its paywalled articles, and as such is creating the ability to bypass those paywalls entirely.
Yeah, you start to get into like the fair use of copyright and the legalities around that. Like Google Books went through that, you know, process, like, you know, whatever it was, like 15 years ago. Of course, it was a lot. They had probably a much better understanding of how they were actually using the data from a fair use perspective than probably someone who's running an LLM, because again, it goes back to like, we don't know exactly what's actually happening and like why that information is going out. In terms of like memorization and overfitting and people potentially exploiting it beyond just something like a copyright infringement, is part of the danger there, if I overfit the model and I memorize something about the training data, and maybe that memorization contains like, let's say, you know, personally identifiable information about like a customer or something like that, then there's a risk of essentially someone being able to put a prompt in that exposes that data?
Yeah, absolutely. That's there. It could be, don't quote me on this, but one thing that I see potentially being problematic later down the line is if your LLM is memorizing too closely to the data sets, then it might just have stale data because you can't really tell it, hey, forget the old data, add the new data, especially if the data and LLM are tightly coupled. So that part is very clear. Like if it has stale data, it might conflict and have problems there. But the part that I don't want you to conflict, this is just my speculations. If you're memorizing too closely, then there are likely to be chances that when I memorize a data set, it's going to conflict with other valid data sets that I have for other tasks, and LLMs are going to start getting confused and generating things that are neither here nor there, which really hurts you when you're trying to figure out. You can build things like, okay, tell me what source you're picking out, tell me what things you pick out to get insight into what the LLM is choosing. But when you start to get conflicts between multiple possible like edge points on the edge of the multiple decision boundaries, that's where I think memorization can become particularly a problem, because it's going to look like a valid output, but it's going to be very hard for you to verify whether it should be in that case. Because we'll just look at it and then we might glaze over it, etc. That's just a personal speculation of mine based on what I've seen so far. So take that with a pinch of salt, but that seems to be a problem that some clients have expressed to me. Again, anything I say here specifically with LLMs, keep in mind that we don't know enough about all of the challenges. At least I don't know enough about all of the little challenges and intricacies, because that gets built up over years of trial and error experience and people talking about it. Right now, all the people have been doing mostly the same things in mostly the same ways, because that's how the stock market has reacted to LLMs, is chatbots, RAG, whatever. So it ends up being that we haven't had as much of an exploration into the deep nuances of these topics. So that's something like I always try to push very, very strongly when I write about LLMs, and especially on the security and safety side, is look, I don't really, I know probably slightly more than the average person, or slightly more than the average deep learning practitioner, because I've read probably more research papers than them. But we're still really grasping at straws and figuring things out. So like that's a big caveat that I'd always try to put. If you're trying to ask me about what's more efficient, how does math work, etc., I'm broader. I can give you that and my answers are going to be correct and I'm willing to die on those things. These more fuzzy sides of LLMs, there's a lot of false confidence that people talk about. None of us really have answers.
Well, there's so much like nuance involved, like even, talking about the memorization situation, I might want to, if I want to ask, an LLM to tell me what is the quote, a famous quote by Mark Twain or something like that, then I want it to be able to have that memorized and give me the exact quote. But if I tell it to produce Sean Falconer's social security number and home address, then I probably don't want that necessarily being memorized and being produced. And it's like, how do you know which ones are okay to essentially respond with essentially the memorized answer versus something where you deny it fully versus something where you're, creating something that's net new? That's a hard problem to solve.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And I think that's where data privacy startups, et cetera, are starting to become a real player in the market, in my opinion, is because what you can do with them is, okay, let me, or this is something we did with one of our clients, that, hey, if we're working with legal cases, I want them to memorize the contents. I don't want them to memorize person's names. So why don't we use something like a privacy preserving substitution where I replace the name with some other made up name so that even if it memorizes, the privacy is not compromised. That's where I think the big value adds are, instead of trying to get the LLM very specifically to, I think a lot of the current way we try to align them is say, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad. And we hope that a human would understand this intuitively, LLMs would too. That's not the case. Clearly, that's failed too many times for us to even pretend like it can be. But maybe if you can play around with the data and the things you don't want to memorize, maybe have a separate layer for them maybe you have them changed in ways that changing the input samples, et cetera. That's how you create safe systems. Safety is not just about preventing Terminator. It's about a lot more banal things, such as don't spit out somebody's social security information, even if you have access to it, when you're giving that personal information.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you could put essentially like a you know, privacy gateway or firewall around the training material, then just make the decision up front of, hey, it doesn't make sense to have, you know, I don't know, someone's home address or things that basically we don't want memorized as part of the training day, because then we don't have to go through all these, like, you know, jump through these hoops to try to figure out how do we, you know, figure out the nuance of what gets memorized, what doesn't, and what is okay to spit out. Because even in the worst case, it spits something out. If you essentially replace it with some sort of de-identified value, then you're leaking a de-identified value versus the actual raw material that's valuable. And not to make this too much about, you know, Skyflow and the company I work for, but this is an area that essentially we've, you know, put a lot of our time and resources into and are helping a number of different customers, and especially in like highly regulated industries like healthcare and so forth, to be able to navigate and invest in LLM technology without essentially, you know, compromising privacy.
Yeah, that's important. I think Amazon does this really, really well. Alleged. They said they put this in their research publication. I don't know if they do this internally and how much they do it. But when they're training Alexa, what they do is they do privacy preserving substitutions. So if the data set going in is I am going to New York, they might switch out New York with I am going to Chicago. So it still has the intent of the training without the specificity, which already is leaps ahead of not doing anything like that. Is, I think, 70 to 80 to even 90% of your memorization problems are solved just by making simple substitutions like this. The reason organizations don't do this is, one, it's not, if I was an AI engineer, you're hiring me, and it's almost stupid for me. It makes me look stupid when I say, hey, you know what we should do? We should sit down and really think about what data should go in and what data should go out, and then carefully demarcate everything. So that things work. What I want to say is, hey, I'm going to build this really cool AI that looks fancy and does all of this. But the value adds are in sitting down, understanding the context, the domain, and working step by step. You can't try to automate this process fully, because there is so much nuance to every single privacy substitution or deciding what to memorize, what not to memorize in any given case. So, you know, that's where a lot of, when I speak to potential clients, I tell them, look, there's a good chance that you read my work, you come to me thinking I'm going to create some AI system that's going to impress everybody at the party when you talk about it. Most likely, the first few months, all I'm going to do is I'm going to sit with you, try to understand what you do, and try to see how can we structure your data most effectively.
You know, when it comes to like security, privacy of like a non-LLM based application, like, I think, you know, we've reached a point where we basically assume that someone's going to break some part of those systems. And so often we build security in layers, and that way, just because like one layer gets penetrated doesn't mean that there's exposure to everything. It's unlikely that essentially all layers will break. Is there, I guess, like an LLM equivalent to this, or should we basically always be assuming that despite our best efforts, someone who's determined enough is going to be able to break these systems? And how do we like protect against that?
That's a tricky situation, I guess. Really, it goes down to good design is always going to be the answer to this. Shocking, I know, but instead of expecting, again, too many teams, what they try to do is they try to tack everything onto the LLM. So we're going to fine-tune it for safety. We're going to fine-tune it to catch bad examples. We're going to fine-tune it. Here's what tends to work better is, as much as you can, take away responsibility from your LLM and move it to other more controllable systems. Because really where things start to break is, and where you have problems are, I try to use an LLM, somebody breaks it, like the Poem attack, and I don't know why it was broken in the Poem attack. If you can take that responsibility and put that into another kind of AI system that's easier to understand, comprehend, you've already done a lot of your heavy lifting for you. You've taken away that, you've added multiple layers of security. So if something is fragile, don't just let that be it. And that has a twin effect of also improving performance. Because one of the most common like pet peeves of I have of mine is like people have classification problems in text and they're trying to use an LLM there. BERT and everything else has been, this has been a proven this models for these that work really well. They're much more efficient. Why not just use them? When you're trying to summarize, why not use something else? There are people I knew who were trying to filter text and they had these rules and they were trying to fine tune an LLM. Now, to me, that was the most insane thing you could do because you have all of your rules predefined. Just apply a regex. Problem solved. Like, why are you trying to create these text samples and fine tune your LLM and try to get it that way? This is how you improve the security and performance of your system. That is, as much as you can, try to define rules of engagement and where you can let other systems chip in there. Because then if something breaks, you know what specifically broke and what to fix. And you don't have to deal with the additional stochasticity of what is something you don't understand.
Yeah, I think that's you made a really, really good point there around like we're trying to like shift too much responsibility into the LLM and then try to fine-tune guardrails around everything that could potentially go wrong. But there's other ways outside of the LLM before the data ever even hits the LLM for training that we can actually use more conventional approaches that we understand that that essentially shifts some of the responsibilities kind of like left of the actual LLM around like, you know, security, privacy, preventing things like prompt injections. And then also, I think that you made a good point about like, we don't need to throw, just because we have LLMs available to us doesn't mean it's always the answer for every type of like classification problem or whatever it is that we want to do. Like that's a little bit like, you know, taking a jackhammer to put a tack on the wall. Like it doesn't always make sense. There's like sometimes like basic statistical model will work just fine, like or a regex. Like you don't need to like throw an entire like open AI at like a simple problem.
Yeah, that's always we saw this tendency a lot with deep learning originally, which is we saw people were trying to use deep learning everywhere for everything. And now that they kind of shifted that over to LLMs. So it's always been very confusing to me because like sometimes I'll see people and they're like, we're doing it this way. And I'll be very proud that they're able to use LLMs and fine tune and quantization. I'm like, why are you even doing this? There is something so much easier. I guess it's one of those things where LLMs have become this hammer that everybody now has. So now we're all going looking for nails.
Absolutely. So as we start to wrap up, like what advice do you have for people who, you know, either developers or, you know, companies that are looking to build LLM-based applications?
That's a good question. One, the biggest advice I can give you, one that I hope that I can make adequately through my writing, etc., is that there are no LLM experts. So really question everything. Like everything I said here could probably be, might be 10 years down the line, you find out a lot of what I was saying was complete nonsense and was wrong. So apply your own judgment when processing information. There's a lot of, there is a lot of commercial interest these days in like selling generative AI startup kickbacks. Like somebody reached out to me, hey, would you like to do a $10,000 training session for a company for 5 days where you just teach them about generative AI using it effectively for executives? And that to me was like, that was shocking. Like, and that really goes down to because there's a lot of trust that's being thrown around that should not be. So advice number one would absolutely be a lot more skeptical online, especially when people start to talk about transformational technologies, because a lot of this is what's grasping at straws. Number two would just be, again, LLMs aren't as magic as people think they are. So in many ways, I mean, in almost every way, the same fundamentals that apply to traditional machine learning in AI situations do apply to it. Namely, domain knowledge is always going to be the number one, the most important thing, because if you don't have that understanding of your domain, you can build the best technical product and it's going to be useless to your user because you haven't understood how they use it. So your user is probably more important than an AI expert in telling you what to build. Focus on your data very extensively. Talk about if you're concerned about privacy, then make sure you're using the right kind of situations. Think about, okay, if I have something where I just need to spit out chunks of my text from memory, a lot of our RAG problems can probably be restated as just give the user samples of like what they're looking for and let them make the decision on what they want to look into further. So there you almost think you've cut down your cost 90% just by reframing the problem and asking the user to do a little bit more work, which most people would happily do anyway because they want to verify the hallucinations, etc. So good design, good structure, thinking about what the value adds are and what just the nice to have are always supposed to be number one when you build your systems around these.
Awesome. Well, Fevanch, thank you so much for being here. Last thing, you know, how should people get in touch with you or explore your writing?
So LinkedIn would be just my name twice, Bevansh twice, Fevanch. My writing, my primary newsletter is AI Made Simple. If you come on there, you'll find all of my other work as well. So that's a good place to start. Oh yeah, those two platforms are good. I try to share as much as I can on different social medias, but my writing is definitely what I am best at. You might have figured it out from this podcast, but there's a reason I don't make videos or post a podcast on my own. Writing is definitely my special. Long form writing is definitely what I'm best at doing. So those would be the best place to find me.
Well, fantastic. Yes. And we'll include those links in the show notes. But thank you so much for being here. I really enjoyed this. And I think this is a fascinating topic. There's so, like you've explained, like there's so much unknown in the space and a lot to like, you know, figure out. And really no one's an expert.
And one last final point. Don't listen to the Terminator people. The only people I think that are worse than the AI is going to change everything is the people who are convinced that AI is going to destroy everything, because they even get in the way of innovation and distract us from what the real problems that we have to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very rare. I think that things lie on either side of the extremes. There's usually somewhere in the gray zone is the reality. Well, thank you so much and cheers.
Good one, Sean. Bye.